The effect was immediate and amazing. He transformed into the spitting image of Claver himself. Even the clothes were right. Everything. Claver chuckled. Check the passenger side mirrors. Sloane did so, and he whistled long and loud. I do look exactly like you, he said, marveling. The belt and the box were, of course, from Tech World. The people known as the Tau on that planet wore these devices instead of clothing. They could project imagery that made a person look like they were dressed in any color or fashion they liked. Claver clearly tampered with the box to make it project his own face on top of Sloane's. I'm impressed, Sloane said. This will get me into his office, but why don't you just march up there and shoot him yourself if you hate him as much as I do? Hold on, I said from the back seat. Who said anything about shooting Winslade? I thought we were going to shake him down to get him to return. You thought wrong, Claver said, throwing me a glare over his shoulder. He shook his head at me slowly, indicating I should shut up. My lips twisted up in disgust. Claver was a schemer, and I'd been caught up in his crooked plans before. He clearly didn't want me to talk about the Galactic Key in front of Sloane. I fell silent, deciding to wait to see how things played out. The idea of having Winslade running around with the key in his possession worried me a good deal. He was worse than Turov, in my opinion. When I shut up, Claver's face transformed into a sly smile. He turned back to Sloane, who was eyeing the two of us suspiciously. Think about it, he said. We all want this man dead, but none of us want to pay for the crime. By wearing my face, you shield yourself from the vid cameras.
And why don't they just arrest you? Sloane asked.
Claver pointed at me at this point. You see McGill here? He's another Winslade hater from way back. I nodded because it was pretty much true. Winslade and I had never gotten along. He's my alibi. He and I will parade ourselves in front of as many cameras as we can over the next 10 minutes. You see, that way you're covered, I'm covered, and he's covered. We three are the most likely suspects. The cops will know that. But when they investigate, they'll realize none of us could have committed the crime because we weren't here. Sloane squinted at each of us in turn. He pointed a finger at me.
Why didn't you have him do it?
Claver laughed. Debts are so quickly forgotten. Did that little matter of 600,000 much-needed credits slip your mind already, Sloane?
Claver handed him a gun then. It was a weird-looking thing fashioned into the shape of a bar of soap. You'd never know it was a weapon except for the black oval button on the back of it.
This thing contains almost no metal. The outer shell is organic, inert material. All their scanners will be fooled.
Sloane eyed the weapon, hesitating.
Not interested, Claver said. He made a tisking sound. I thought you had it all, Sloane. Motive, guts, and a healthy desire for easy credit. I guess I was wrong. You can play McGill's part. It only pays 1/100 of the fee, but it's a lot safer.
Claver turned toward me, passing the disguised weapon in my direction.
McGill, I guess you're getting rich today. Could you hand McGill the belt, Sloane?
Sloane licked his lips, then reached out suddenly and took the gun.
Changed your mind, eh? Claver asked. Okay, then. Go.
Still looking like Claver, Sloane climbed out of the air car and walked quickly toward the guard post that oversaw the landing site. It was technically a violation to land here unless you were on official hegemony business, but the guards didn't usually check IDs until someone tried to enter the building. Claver watched his twin hustle toward security. There was a worrisome pause as they ID'd him. But he passed. Claver's smile was an evil thing to witness. It gave me pause. His plan seemed elaborate, but it appeared to be well thought out. That didn't completely put my mind at ease, though. Claver's schemes routinely resulted in disaster for everyone but him. I watched Sloane disappear on his mission of assassination. I'd come to feel sorry for the guy over the brief time I'd known him. He was just a fellow down on his luck, and there were countless examples of his kind in the world. "Come on," Claver said, rapping his knuckles on the dash. "Let's move. He's inside."
"Move?" I asked. "Where are we going, to find some cameras to parade in front of?"
Claver looked at me like I was the biggest dummy this side of a ventriloquist's knee.
"You bought that crap?" he asked, laughing. "Sometimes, McGill, I wonder how lonely your brains must be inside that big skull of yours. Come on, we don't have much time."
I felt like belting him one, but I climbed out of the air car and followed him toward the waiting guards.
"Tell me what's going on, Claver," I said, "or I'm tipping off security right here, right now."
Claver looked at me. "You won't do that."
"You want to try me?"
Claver gave me that evil smile again.
"You're not the same man any longer, McGill. I've got your number. You've got a kid, a woman. She's nuts, but she's still a woman. Then they're your folks. They seem nice. Did you know that before I came to your door, I knocked on theirs and had a nice little chat with your mom?"
That was it. I hit him. A sucker punch from a man that outweighed him by 30 kilos. That's never an easy thing to shrug off. Claver spun around and fell to the ground.
"Don't you ever," I began,
but I was interrupted from my intimidating speech. The guards were running toward us now. They had their hands on their pistols and blood in their eyes. They'd been watching us act weird out here on the Puff Creek landing zone for a long while, I guess, and they'd had enough.
"McGill," Claver said, not bothering to get up, "you're determined to screw up everything, aren't you?"
"I'm known for that." The pounding feet of the MPs came closer, and I looked up at them. When I looked back down at Claver again, I blinked, and my face registered shock. The man at my feet wasn't Claver, not anymore. It was Winslade. But then he smiled, and I knew that evil smile too well. It was Claver. It had to be. He must have used another one of his boxes to change his appearance. When the guards arrived, they recognized Winslade.
"Arrest this man for striking an officer,"
Claver said, doing a fair imitation of Winslade's voice. They grabbed me, and the Winslade look-alike got up, dusting himself off. He followed along behind me, looking stern, while I was hustled toward the entrance to Central. I consoled myself with the knowledge that I'd at least gotten to punch Claver one more time. Chapter 50. We headed directly to Winslade's office. I don't mind saying I was a little freaked out. What was Claver's plan? I decided to play it cool. Trying to convince the guards Winslade wasn't going to wash. They'd seen me punch him, and they were all business at this point. What didn't help was that I was from Legion Varus, a known band of ruffians, while Winslade was from Hegemony. Hogs and independent Legion people rarely saw eye to eye. From the point of view of the police, it was extremely believable that a non-com from a disreputable outfit would take a poke at a hog officer. It happened frequently enough.
"Could you open my door?" Winslade asked one of the guards. "I seem to have dropped my fob during this buffoon's clumsy assault."
"Certainly, Primus," the man said, touching his hand to the lock plate. The door shot open, and a very shocked-looking figure that looked like Claver stood there, staring at us. Only it wasn't Claver. It had to be the hapless Sloane. I could see the surprise in Sloane's eyes. Maybe he'd been lying in wait for Winslade, but he hadn't planned on him coming with the cavalry and me, too. Sloane looked at me, and I could see understanding flood into him.
"They caught you, huh, McGill?" he asked. "Well, I'd still say it was worth it."
He raised his bar of soap and aimed it at Claver. I guess he thought it was Winslade. I could hardly blame him for that. Claver knew he was in trouble and dove behind one of the confused guards. The guards were slow to react. As far as they could tell, a lunatic was aiming something resembling a bar of soap at them. An invisible beam struck the guard that was shielding Claver. The man's eyes widened, and he fell to his knees, then flat on his face. I never even saw an injury, so I wasn't sure how he died. The weapon was clearly one of those alien-made specials that killed in devious ways. Maybe his neurons had stopped firing, or maybe his blood had congealed all at once. There was no way to tell without an autopsy. The second guard caught on when his buddy went down. He drew his pistol, sidestepped so he was partly obscured by the doorway, and fired three sizzling bolts into the room. I heard an alarm go off somewhere. The weapon's discharge had tripped it. Sloane caught two of the three bolts. The last one splashed the slanting glass behind him, causing it to smoke and create a melted divot. As testimony to the strength of Central's construction, it didn't cut all the way through. "Got him," the guard said proudly.
"Well done,"
Claver said, still acting the part of Winslade. He quickly stepped past the guard and into his office. When he got behind the desk, Claver did a double take. Frowning, he stepped back to Sloane, who was being looked over by the man who'd shot him.
"This man is... Sir, there's some kind of field around him, a projection of some kind. I'm..."
While the guard had been speaking, Claver had stooped and picked up the soap bar. He pressed it to the guard's neck and activated it. The guard pitched forward.
"What the hell?"
I demanded, stepping forward.
"What did you do that for?"
"Bah! Don't be a baby, McGill. He'll pop out of the oven downstairs in an hour. Would you rather be interrogated?"
"No,"
I admitted. Claver grinned with Winslade's lips. It was a strange sight to see. To me, it was like Winslade was standing there imitating Claver's mannerisms.
"What are you so happy about?"
I asked. He lifted up an object. It was the galactic key.
"Where the heck did that come from?"
"Take a look behind the good Primus's desk."
I stepped around the desk and saw the real Winslade lying there. Claver began to work quickly while I gaped. First, he stepped to Winslade's computer terminal and accessed the data core for the whole facility. He used the key to bypass every login and biometric identification system. He quickly began shutting things off. Alarms began to go off on every floor, then fall silent again as each was shut down in turn. The cameras died. Then fail-safe systems activated to back them up. The fail-safes quickly faltered as well. It was amazing, really. I'd never really thought about what the Galactic Key could do to a place like Central, which was full of the best equipment that credits could buy. In other words, alien-made gizmos. In this case, it was the all-important data core that was purchased off-world, and therefore had to have breakable security to be legal on the frontier. Two more confused guards arrived with their weapons drawn before Claver could finish his dirty work. They were breathing hard. They looked at the body-choked office in horror.
"Primus, are you all right?"
"Yes, fortunately," Claver said. "But the attackers have escaped. Would you be so kind as to pursue them?"
"Which way, sir?"
"You don't know?"
"The whole building is off-grid. I'm sorry, Primus. We can't even raise dispatch."
"Unacceptable. I'll be making a report later. Go to fourth level, B section. I believe that's where they were headed."
"Fourth and B. Isn't that the kitchen, sir? I..."
"Veteran, are you questioning my information or my intelligence?"
Neither, sir. Glad you're all right."
Claver made a dismissive wave. When the guards were gone, I whistled long and low.
"Wow. I'm impressed," I said. "You sound and act just like Winslade. If this trading game doesn't work out for you, there's always the theater."
He looked up from the terminal, distracted.
"We're not done yet," he said.
"No?"
He knelt and went to work on Winslade's tapper next. I walked around the desk and watched, frowning. I saw he had the galactic key in his hand.
"What are you doing to the Primus exactly?" I demanded.
"I'm perming him, of course. What else? Did you expect me to give him mouth-to-mouth?"
I grabbed him and pulled him away from Winslade. "There's no need for that. He's dead already. Leave well enough alone."
"He's going to explain what happened here to the authorities. We've erased the vid data and damaged the core, but that's not enough to keep any of these men from testifying against us later."
My eyes crawled over the bodies on the floor. Two guards, Sloane and Winslade. Killing them was one thing, but perming them? That was too much.
"You want to get arrested, is that it, boy?"
Claver said in a snake-like voice.
"We're on a purge, in case you hadn't noticed. A clean-up mission for our team."
"Our team? Who's our team? You?"
"No, my muscle-brained friend. Turov is our leader, naturally. She's going to be elevated to equestrian after all the evidence is in against Nagata."
Looking from Winslade to Claver and back again, I didn't know what to think. "Nagata?" I asked.
"Like I said, we're not done yet."
"What evidence?" I asked.
"The evidence I'm busy planting with Winslade's computer,"
he said, laughing.
"Is there any other kind?"
"Okay," I said. "I know Turov is ambitious. I get that. I know Winslade stole the key and she wants it back. But why are you perming him?"
"He's got to go. Not because he stole the key, but because he knows of its existence and how to operate it."
"Is that all?" I asked. "I can fix that. Give it to me." Claver stared at me. "Let me get this straight," I said. "You're 100% sure you can get away with perming a Primus in the middle of Central? That is ballsy, my man. A crime like that is a hard one to cover up. People have memories, you know, that go beyond what's in the data core. They'll never stop investigating this. Give me the key, and I'll fix it right." My big hand was parked in his face, palm up, waiting. After counting to three, maybe it was four, he finally handed it over. I went to work on Winslade's tapper. I broke through security effortlessly with the key. Essentially, whenever a screen came up asking for a code or a password or a fingerprint, a touch of the key caused the data to fill itself in correctly. Within seconds, I was deeper into the menus than any normal person could go. There, I found Winslade's memory backups. Going back a few weeks, I found they weren't held locally. They were stored on a server in Central. Again, the passwords and security checks fell one by one. I was soon able to access his core data. There it all was, his mind, his body, stored in computers down to the DNA and synaptic connections. Riffling through his past like anyone handling a folder full of files, I erased them one by one. His mind was being destroyed, but only for the most recent accumulative backups of it. The system worked by storing changes over time rather than full copies of the entire thing. I left his body alone, but I erased a month's worth of his mind. It was a strange feeling, like I was playing God. To make myself feel better, I kept reminding myself that Winslade's only other option was non-existence. Claver watched me closely and talked over my shoulder about the key.
"Are you sure this will work?"
he asked. "Yeah, I told you, I've done it before more than once. Haven't you ever wondered how I get out of things?"
"Maybe you know what you're doing sometimes,"
he admitted reluctantly. It was still strange to me to hear Claver's voice coming out of Winslade.
"Just make sure he doesn't remember the key. We've already got three people who know about the treasure you're wielding in your hand right now, McGill. You, me, and Turov. That's about two over the limit, if you ask me. You can't keep a secret so big with four people. It's not possible. Someone is bound to blab or to attempt to eliminate the others. Winslade took it upon himself to demonstrate this today."
It occurred to me that Claver and I were busy doing exactly what Claver had said Winslade might do at this very moment, but I was too busy to argue about that. "I got your point," I said. "You still haven't explained why we have to take sides, and if we do, why should we take Turov's side?" Claver straightened up and put his hands on his hips.
"You aren't suggesting we strike out on our own, are you?"
"Hell no, I just don't want to align myself with someone I disagree with."
"Ah," he said loudly, "I see the problem now. You're an idiot. I should have seen that one coming a mile off. Boy, let me explain the ways of the universe to you, as some critical realities seem to have slipped by that fine mind of yours."
He was pissing me off, but I just kept working on Winslade's memories. If you could get past enough bullshit and insults, Claver often said something interesting.
"You remember when the Galactic Battle Fleet showed up in Earth orbit?"
he asked.
"Back when they filled the sky with alien ships?"
"I wasn't there personally." "Wait, you're not telling me you're that old, are you?" He chuckled.
"I was young, but I was there. Anyway, at that point, Earth had to make a choice. We could suck it up and play ball with these pushy aliens, or we could die. We made the choice we did because there really wasn't any choice."
"All right," I said. "But what's that got to do with choosing sides now? We don't have to work for Nagata or Turov."
"That's where you're wrong. You see, people in power don't understand men like us, McGill. They think we're just assholes. We're problems, desperately in need of a solution, and the solution is an obvious one."
To make his point, he directed a finger toward the mess on the floor. I looked at Winslade's twisted corpse. I had to admit Claver was right. When you played with fire, you often got burned.
"So," Claver continued, "nosy, irritating individuals like us need to sign on with the powerful in order to keep existing."
I nodded, understanding his point, but not agreeing with it entirely. "What's to keep a ruthless woman like Turov from doing the same thing to you and me later?"
"Nothing,"
he admitted.
"Nothing, that is, if we don't prepare for that eventuality."
"What can we possibly do? She keeps climbing in rank. She keeps becoming more powerful. Hell, she might even be the ruler of the world someday." He gave me a tight look.
"Don't talk like that,"
he said.
"To answer your question practically, there is a way to keep breathing no matter what in these situations."
"Really?" I asked, honestly interested. "Tell me. I'm all ears."
"Knowledge, my boy, that's the key to a long existence. Learn secrets and keep them to yourself, and always have another secret up your sleeve if the last one gets out."
"Secrets? You've got to be kidding. Secrets can get a man killed. Just look at Winslade." He shook his head.
"He didn't keep his secrets. He tried to exploit them. Winslade here, he got big ideas and went up against someone more experienced and dangerous than himself. That's not what I'm suggesting you should do."
"Okay," I said, "but I still don't see how secrets..."
"If you'd shut up for a second, I'll tell you,"
he said angrily. Then he paused and started to laugh.
"There you go again, proving my point for me. An irritating fellow like you simply must plan for the worst. People don't revive a man like James McGill out of compassion. Every time you die, there's a good chance someone will come to their senses and think, 'Hell, he's already dead. Let's just leave him well enough alone.'"
"That's great thinking, but..."
"Hold on, let me finish. You've got to set things up so that they need to bring you back. That's my method. You need an ace in the hole. Now think, what's the one thing a dead, naked man might have that would compel another person to revive him?"
I looked at him blankly for a second. He reached up and tapped me on the forehead. I went to grab his finger, but his hand quickly retreated.
"All you have at that point is whatever is in your head, McGill. Nothing else. I'm talking about information. Secrets those in power want to learn. Secrets are the only things we still possess after death. They go beyond the normal churn of recycling flesh and brain. My continued existence is based entirely on knowing things that other people don't. I keep secrets. That's all that matters."
I squinted at him, thinking hard for a second before I shook my head. "No," I said. "You're wrong about that. Actions matter, Claver. What a man does in this life and the next, that counts. Our actions define us, and they outlive us as well. To me, it's what I do that matters.
He chuckled bemusedly. Think whatever you want, Mr. Philosopher, but just remember what I told you, if you want to keep on existing.
Standing up, I pocketed the key. Claver was instantly on guard.
What are you doing? He demanded.
Returning a valuable item to our patron saint, Galina Turov. Claver would rather have carried the key, but I didn't let him. The confusion in the building allowed us to hit the elevators and ride them downward. The shaft went at a slant along the outer wall of the pyramid-shaped building. Outside, I could see for miles. It was a sunny day, even out over the Atlantic. I had a hard time thinking as we rode toward the exit in Claver's air car. What I really wanted to do was run. Sure, Claver had rigged the security and we'd erased Winslade's recent memories, but there had to be some kind of clue, something that they could trace. It made me nervous to think we weren't escaping, but digging deeper instead. Worse than all that was the feeling I'd been dragged into a dirty business. Claver was amazingly persuasive. He talked me into joining this adventure, and I was by no means certain I would live to see the sunset. Chapter 51. As it turned out, we marched right out of Central under a clear blue sky. The security system had been disabled on every floor down to the landing port level where we'd left Claver's vehicle. When we boarded the air car and sped away, the whole building was in pandemonium. Once we were on our way, Claver dropped the simulated appearance of Winslade. I found that he was easier to talk to that way. "Where are we going now?" I asked, looking out through the back canopy.
"Turov's house. It's a pretty nice place."
"I bet. So, Winslade killed her, but she got a revive?"
"She did, but she did it unofficially. She had standing instructions to come out of a private facility if she was assassinated. Winslade probably had plans to eliminate her or incriminate her somehow, but he never got the chance to spring them."
Craning my neck around further, I looked back at Central. The place was crawling with security. People were evacuating the building in endless streams, heading in every direction. What a mess we'd left behind. Of all the disasters I'd run out on, this one ranked at the top. The big sirens were blaring, and all kinds of emergency people were flying in from every direction. They had no idea why their security systems had all shut down at once. With dead bodies on the floor and evacuation protocols in full swing, it was relatively easy to escape. Hell, lots of cars were zooming by, going faster than we were. "They probably think it's another attack," I said. "Like down at the spaceport."
"You never know when terrorists will strike," Claver agreed.
I looked at him sourly. "Most people don't, but you often seem to. Tell me, what secrets do you have that would interest me? You think you've got something big enough to make me want to revive you?" Claver grinned. It was a dirty grin, the kind an old man gives an underage girl in a bar.
"I know you were here with me today in a front row seat at Winslade's murder,"
he said. "All the more reason to perm you," I pointed out.
"Right, but let's say for the sake of argument that these facts were revealed a week or two after my death."
"How the hell would that happen?" Claver laughed.
"I can see you haven't been paying attention. I'm nothing if not a careful planner. You think about that the next time you consider leaving me dead. There won't be much time. You'd best get hopping and revive me pronto."
I tried not to think about his threats, but I did anyway. I couldn't help it. Claver was disturbing to me. If there was ever a man that I'd never understood completely, it was him. When we got to Turov's place, we landed on the roof. We were permitted to head down into the mansion where we met the Imperator in person. Turov didn't look happy to see me.
"Did you have to bring him here?" she asked Claver.
"He's been helpful up until this point."
She eyed me with new respect.
All right, then. He helped retrieve my property. Well done, you two. Central has been cleansed of a dangerous renegade today. You both have my gratitude.
I looked at her in honest surprise. To me, the dangerous people weren't dead. They were in the room with me right now. People died, sir, I said. And this joker wanted to perm Winslade. Was that your idea?
Turov's attitude shifted again. She looked at me like I was some kind of disease.
Nothing of the sort has ever been suggested by my office, she said quickly. You need to get that through your head, McGill, if you're going to be working for me.
Working for you? I'm under your command at the moment, if that's what you mean, but I don't...
That's good enough, I suppose,
Turov said.
Let's stick to that approach.
I'm in your direct chain of command. Also, it's important for you to keep in mind that there are only a few steps between my position and the very top of the military chain. Do not forget that.
If you say so, sir.
Imperator Turov, Claver said, leaning forward a little. I think you misunderstand me. McGill has been useful, but I didn't say I wanted him to join our team.
We both looked at him in surprise. Why the hell did you bring me along then, you snake? I demanded. He jerked a thumb in my direction without meeting my eye. He kept his gaze on Turov and her gun.
If I might suggest, Imperator, we have better options at this point.
What other options would you suggest, Claver? I demanded. Perming me too?
What I'm suggesting,
Claver said, talking directly to Turov,
is that an additional layer to our defenses might be helpful. A culprit, clearly depicted as guilty by altered security vids, would go a long way to creating the kind of closure that comforts investigating organizations. In this case, we happen to have a universally mistrusted individual at hand.
Glaring at him for a second, I turned back to Turov to make my case. What I found was her standing there with a gun on me. Her eyes were dangerous. I'm not a deep-thinking man, but I could tell that I'd been set up from the beginning. Claver had dragged me along on this string of murders for the sole purpose of pinning them on me by the time we reached the finish line. It made me angry not to have seen this coming. I get it now, I said. Claver's been at this all day, marching around killing folks. I'd figured you'd be dead yourself before we left here, Imperator, but maybe that's not his plan. Maybe he wants to kill me instead. I hereby request permission to arrest him right now. Galena cocked her pretty head and looked at each of us thoughtfully. Then she held out her hand toward Claver.
Give me my property.
Claver looked at her hand like it was a tentacle attached to one of those squid aliens.
I beg your pardon,
he asked.
I know Winslade had the galactic key, and you've taken it from him,
she said.
Hand it over, before I become angry.
I'm sorry, Imperator, but I don't have it. Install a lie detector app on my tapper and test me. I'm not lying.
Suddenly, Turov's face became worried.
Who has it, then? Where is my property?
Her voice was rising, becoming shrill. The good news was her gun had swung to cover Claver instead of me. I thought about making a move on her. I didn't have a sidearm on me, but I could draw and throw a knife in one smooth motion if the need was there. As she was distracted and out of practice in close combat, there was a good chance I could peg her to the wall before she could draw a bead on me and put me down. For about a second, I didn't hear what Claver and Turov were saying to one another. I didn't much care what it was, either. They were two snakes hissing in a basket. Finally, I made my decision. Imperator, I said loudly. She startled and shifted her eyes back to me.
What is it now, McGill?
I have your key. Right here. I pulled out the device and showed it to her. Claver rolled his eyes.
Shut up, Claver, Turov said. Let me get this straight. McGill retrieved the key, and you allowed him to hold on to it.
Claver shrugged. I brought the key here. He's just the bearer.
She narrowed her eyes at both of us.
I get it, Claver. You tried to play me for the fool at the end. Say what you will about McGill, he gets the job done, and he doesn't hide things. At least, he's not good at it. James, I almost always know what you're thinking.
Thank you, sir, I think. She nodded to me, and without another word, shot Claver in the gut. He fell, gasping. He rolled onto his back, eyes bulging in shock. Claver gasped and made sounds of vexation.
You idiot, McGill. Why didn't you move when I had her distracted? What kind of a thug are you anyway?
Turov stalked forward like a huntress and stood over her victim. She shot him again. But it wasn't a fatal wound. He was in shock, I could tell.
You're not dead yet, she said to him. But you must give me a reason not to finish the job and then perm you.
Claver's lips quivered, running with blood and spit.
Throne world, he said, coughing.
She shook her head.
Not good enough. I know about that planet. I know where it is. I know everything.
She stopped as Claver's trembling hand came to rest on her calf. It squeezed there, and he struggled to speak.
You don't know everything, he said. You just think you do, you bitch. You don't know how to take it, how to use it.
Turov's eyes narrowed. She stared at him for a second longer, then shot him in the face. Watching him die, she put out her hand toward me.
Give me the key.
What are you going to do? I asked.
What should have been done long ago.
Instead of doing as she asked, I put the key on her desk. When she reached for it, I grabbed both her wrists and held them firmly.
Don't tell me I shot the wrong man,
she said in a sudden rage.
Look, Imperata, I said.
I don't understand everything that's going on today, but I'm not in the mood to let you perm him.
I'm not going to do that, fool, she said. I need him.
You believe all that stuff he said about the squid home world, do you? Throne world, I think he called it.
That's not why I need him, she said. I need a scapegoat. You should be happy I chose him instead of you for this purpose.
All right, but tell me one thing. Why should I let you get away with all this? Why should I let you engineer murders all day long? Why not go to the authorities and...
Because you were running around assassinating people today, McGill. You and Claver, not me.
I thought about that and I sighed. I had no evidence that she was involved. Her enemies would suspect the truth, of course. They'd believe my story, but in the end, a non-com would have a hard time bringing down a slippery top officer, especially when the non-com was from Legion Varus and the officer was part of hegemony.
I can see your wheels turning, she said. Now let me go.
Looking at Claver's corpse, I felt reluctant to let go of Turov. She might do anything. What are you going to do with him, exactly?
I'll take the last few hours of his memories, then let him be revived. When the evidence of his guilt is shown at his trial, he'll suspect something odd happened, but he won't know the details.
Shaking my head, I sighed and let go of her. Claver may have met his match today.
Yes,
she said as she took the key, knelt, and went to work on Claver's dead arm.
I believe he has.
Nagata hauled me back to Central the very next day. I went with dread in my heart. I just knew that he'd figure out I was involved in the disasters Claver had initiated. Still, I played it as straight as I could. Caught red-handed, most men would confess. That was always a mistake in my book. Maybe Nagata knew, and maybe he didn't. But even if he did know, that didn't mean he could prove it. Why give him my head on a silver platter? I used the ground entrance. Sweating on my way up in the elevators, I tried to relax and enjoy the visit. It wasn't every day a non-com was invited to talk with the brass at Central. When I got off the elevator car, I stepped lightly down the carpeted hallway, whistling as I walked. There were cleanup crews and technicians doing forensics. They were checking every optical filament that led to the pinhole cameras in the ceiling.
In general, these people all looked pissed off. They eyed me with suspicion as I passed. I told myself it was probably because I was the only man on the floor without the blue globe patch of hegemony on my shoulder, not because they recognized me. Reaching up to touch the door chime, my hand didn't even make it to the pad before the door swept open. Inside was Nagata sitting behind his desk.
"Veteran McGill," he said slowly. "Come in and stand at ease."
I did as I was invited. The door swept closed behind me, and I clasped my hands behind my back. Nagata was looking at his desk again, tapping on it. He had a pistol there, I saw, and something else. My eyes fixated on the second item. It was familiar to me. It looked like a bar of soap with a button on it, but I knew what it was, a deadly weapon. Forcing my gaze to shift to the view over Nagata's shoulder, I put a slight smile back on my face. "Nice day out there, sir."
"Indeed."
"The funny thing is," I said in a conversational tone, "this building is so tall, the weather is different up here than it is on the ground. I never get over that. Reminds me of the megaflora back on Death World."
"Shut up, McGill."
"Yes, sir." I waited while he tapped around on his screen for a moment longer. Finally, he managed to bring up what he was looking for. He spun the image so it would be correctly oriented from my point of view, and he beckoned me to come forward. There, on the screen, was a slightly blurred image of a large man in motion. I couldn't see his face, just his heavy chin. His fists were rising in the shot as if he was about to attack someone. Now, this normally would have been of only slight interest to me, except that I recognized the uniform the man was wearing. It was mine. There was a wolf's head patch on the shoulder, plain as day. The rank insignia of a veteran was visible, too.
"You are amazingly thorough,"
Nagata said while I stared at the image.
"But there's always something if you keep digging. In this case, an image was left in a buffer on a man's suit camera. The man didn't survive the encounter, unfortunately. Neither did his memory when we revived him last night. Equally disturbing, every image his camera transmitted to the data core was destroyed. Only those stored on the mobile unit itself remained."
My eyes flicked up to Nagata's face, and he met my gaze. His voice was easygoing, but his expression was that of a man smoldering with anger. Interestingly, there was another emotion there. Curiosity. Most men might have broken down at this point, but I continued to play it smoothly. "Interesting shot, sir, but kind of blurry," I said. "Too bad we can't see the face." Nagata stared at me for a long second.
"How'd you do it, McGill?"
he finally asked me. "Do what, sir?"
"Break into Central, perform a rash of assassinations, and escape every security system and guard we have. It was an amazing feat, really. I have to congratulate you."
"Oh, now, hold on, sir. You're not suggesting..."
"No, no. Don't be so modest, man. You're gifted. It's the only way I can explain it. When I first met you, I thought you were some kind of thuggish buffoon. Imagine my surprise at this moment."
"I'm not sure what you're..." I began.
"Not clear on what I'm talking about. Perhaps I should show you more."
He proceeded then to flash up a series of images and short vid clips. Dead men lay all over Winslade's office, including Winslade. I recognized the scene naturally, but I feigned shock and dismay.
"This is unbelievable," I said loudly. "Was it a commando raid? Aliens, perhaps?"
Nagata shook his head in disbelief.
"Winslade told me you wouldn't confess. I have here in my hands enough evidence to put you away for life. Can you comprehend that?"
"Sir," I said, "I'm not the man you want." Nagata smiled at last.
That's the first thing you've said that I'm willing to believe. Now tell me who I really want to prosecute, who should be executed at dawn, McGill.
I knew what he wanted, of course. That had been obvious from the moment I'd walked in. He wanted me to implicate Imperator Turov. He'd set up this entire confrontation with that in mind. It was with some reluctance that I did what had to be done next. I reached down to my belt and touched the box there. Nagata, for all his feigned state of relaxation, moved very quickly indeed. I had to take it as a compliment that he thought I was extremely dangerous, even though his security people had checked every nook and cranny I had for weaponry. He snatched up the pistol on his desk and put it into my face, only it wasn't my face anymore. I'd activated one of Claver's altered disguise boxes from Tau Ceti. Instead of aiming his gun at me, he was aiming it into a mirror image of his own face. I smiled at Nagata's reaction, and I flipped the box off again. He stared, eyes bulging.
"Alien tech," he said. "The image, such resolution. Very clever."
For my own part, I was starting to like Nagata. I wasn't accustomed to having officers think I was some kind of genius. Removing the belt, slowly, I set it on his desk and nudged it in his direction. "I heard about what happened here yesterday," I said. "But I wasn't here. Someone else was, using my face."
"Who?"
"It could have been a lot of people. There are billions of Tau who own boxes like this back on Tech World." Doubt was in his mind now, I could see it. For the first time since I'd walked in, he wasn't 100% certain he had the guilty party. It was time to press that advantage. "There are a lot of adjectives people ascribe to me, sir," I said. "But clever with technical wizardry? No, sir. That's never been on the list. I'm not going to deny that I could kill a room full of guards under the right circumstances, but the rest of this attack was way beyond me." Nagata slowly nodded. A seed had been planted. Now the trick would be to redirect his suspicions on a new path. "The list of people who could pull this kind of thing off is a short one," I continued. "But on the top of it is a man named Claver. He had to be involved in some capacity. Hell, he's the one who altered these boxes in the first place to make them do tricks like this back on Tech World." Nagata put his gun down slowly. He picked up the belt and inspected it closely.
"This device," he said, "combined with a weapon wrapped in purely organic matter, and they're both alien-made."
"I would expect so."
"You're claiming that it wasn't you who performed the assassinations here yesterday, that it was some kind of body double."
"That's the long and short of it, yes, sir." He put the box down and leaned back in his chair, thinking hard.
"Alien gear. Murder in the heart of Central. These things are disturbing. But the most frightening aspect is the fact that someone can walk in here and erase our computers."
I nodded. "That's damn peculiar, sir." He looked me over, squinting at me as if I made his eyes sore. Who knew? Maybe I did.
"What do you know about Throne World, McGill?"
he asked. "Sir?"
"The cephalopod capital."
Happy to change the subject, I related to him a number of things I knew about that distant planet. Most of them he'd already gleaned from reports, but he was interested to learn that I'd encountered one of the squid queens in person. I'd been present when we discovered the data globe that helped pinpoint where in space the enemy homeworld was, too.
"You know,"
Nagata said thoughtfully after listening to me,
"I think I've been sitting behind this desk too long. We're going on a mission next year, you and I together."
"Well, now, hold on, sir," I began.
"Don't worry. You'll stick with your unit. It won't be just me lifting off into space. Not this time. Thousands of hegemony troops will be going. Every legion and ship we can scrape together. There's something big going on out there among the quiet stars, McGill. If we sit here on Earth, the aliens will keep coming. Eventually they'll wipe us all out. Even sneaky bastards like you."
I wasn't sure what to say, so I kept my mouth shut. Nagata got up, walked to his window, and stared down that rain-streaked wall of puffcrete and glass at crawling ground traffic around the base of the pyramid.
"We're surrounded by enemies and unknown technologies,"
Nagata said in a haunted tone.
"That plant race you encountered? They're a cancer in the cephalopod kingdom. That's the squid weakness, you know."
"How's that, sir?"
"Haven't you wondered why the cephalopods have yet to come to Earth and wipe us all out? They should be able to do it, inferior ships notwithstanding. But they have their own problems with the Wurr eating away their star systems."
"I have wondered about that," I said. "There's a lot we don't know about our place in this galaxy, but the Empire should..." Nagata released a bark of laughter.
"The Empire is declining and weak. It's like an old man with a chill, shaking in a blanket. How can we rely on them for protection from the wild aliens beyond the frontier? The Empire technically controls most of the star systems in this galaxy, but far from all of them. We're on the very edge of known space. All sorts of things lurk beyond our borders."
"I see your point." Nagata paused then. We both looked outside at Earth. I wondered what he was thinking about. As an upper-level officer, he knew things of which I had no inkling. I found his somber, almost melancholy mood disturbing.
"McGill,"
Nagata said at last.
"Sir?" "If I let you live another day, will you promise to kill an amazing number of the enemy for me next year?"
"I'd be glad to," I said. "I'm always happy to serve Earth." He nodded, and then he handed me something. It was a small box. I stared at the box for a moment, but I hesitated before opening it. Honestly, I thought it might be some kind of bomb, some kind of final punchline to Nagata's odd, soul-searching speech. Instead, when I opened the box, I discovered two nano-adhesive pins bearing the single gold bar of a junior adjunct. I took them out and felt their weight in my hands.
"Not what you were expecting, is it?"
Nagata asked.
"No, sir. I can't say that it is."
"Listen, Adjunct McGill. You understand our enemies. Sometimes I even think you're in league with them. At other times, I think you're some sort of lunatic."
"I can understand that, sir."
"But I've been watching you for quite a while. Ever since you started killing Galactics and getting away with it, that impressed me very much."
His words startled me. I thought I'd had him bamboozled, but I'd clearly been wrong. He knew far more than he'd been letting on.
"Taking on the role of an officer,"
he continued,
"that's a new level of responsibility. A whole new zone for a man like you. I want you to take this new rank seriously, if that's not too much to ask."
I nodded, running my thumbs over the bars. They were nano-coated, and they wouldn't even smudge.
"I will, sir.
God willing."
"Good," he said. "That's all Earth can ask from any of her sons. Dark days are ahead. I'm certain of it. There may be a special mission in your future, a task that will make use of your unusual talents."
"I'm always up for that sort of thing,"
I lied.
He kicked me out of his office after that, and a few minutes later I was walking the streets that encircled Central. Locating the nearest drinking establishment, I put my new rank insignia onto my collar before I walked in. The gold bars felt good on my neck, but they also felt heavy. I noticed every enlisted legionnaire I found ordering drinks on a Thursday afternoon eyed me differently because I wore them. They looked at me the way kids used to look at the principal back in my elementary school days. It had been a rough week. To make myself feel better, I drank one beer after another, until I didn't feel the weight of the new rank on my collar anymore, or much of anything else.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Homeworld, Book 6 in the Undying Mercenaries series free.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Death World, Book 5 in the Undying Mercenaries series. Written by B.V. Larson. Performed by Mark Boyette. Producer, Mike Charzuk. Copyright 2015 by B.V. Larson. Production copyright 2015 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
And now a free preview of Homeworld, Book 6 in the Undying Mercenary series.
What shore knows not our blood? Horus, 39 B.C. Chapter 1. After Nagata gave me my twin nano-adhesive gold bars, I became an adjunct. But the bureaucrats shuffling around Central weren't satisfied yet. They wanted to put me through a battery of tests to make sure lowly James McGill was worthy of an officer's commission. The hegemony people, or hogs, as legionnaires from independent legions called them, had a lot of rules. They wanted their rules to be respected, even if a 3-star equestrian had already approved the promotion. In addition to their sheer love of red tape, I figured there was just a hint of a sneer on their collective lips. They didn't like seeing a grunt work his way up to a commission so fast. They liked the fact that a man from Legion Varus had managed to earn such an honor, even less. Lastly, hogs just plain don't like me in particular.
"We need to discuss your scores, Veteran McGill," a prim hog named Rossi told me.
"My rank is adjunct," I said.
"Not yet, it isn't. Let's go over these results, shall we?"
Rossi wore the uniform of a primus. She was one of those severe types with her shoulders squared tightly and her hair cropped down to a scalp on the sides. Her sole concession to femininity consisted of a small ponytail she kept stuffed under her cap most of the time. Today it had slipped out to touch her neck. I found that intriguing.
"Shall we go over them, McGill?" she asked again.
Pulling my eyes away from her hair, I frowned. Rossi and I stared at one another for about 3 long seconds. Internally, I thought up and rejected about a half dozen rude comments I could make. "All right," I said at last.
"First off," she said, "your latest psych profile has gained my attention. The metrics are alarming, but the worst part is the trend line. Did you know you're heading down a dark path, McGill?"
"Could you elaborate on that?"
"We're seeing a reduced flight time, that's what we call it, from a state of calm to a state of rage. This behavioral flaw results in violent outbursts. There's also a marked increase in your propensity to take any criticism as a personal attack. Almost as bad, you've moved into a region of high mendacity."
"A region of high what?"
"You lie a lot."
"Oh," I said. Rossi looked at me as if expecting some kind of defensiveness, but she got a blank stare instead. Taking in a deep breath, she pressed on.
"The truthfulness quotient in your responses to even basic questions has dropped to 37%.
"Uh-huh." She wasn't done yet. She proceeded to tell me how I lied and in what situations, and even how long and complicated my lies were. Thinking about all this, I became alarmed. "Excuse me," I interrupted when she got to her next complaint, which consisted of accusing me of having too many sexual encounters with a wide variety of women. "Where are you getting all this data?"
"Your psych profile, as I said."
"I don't think so. That was a short test. Sure, you gave me 2 hours, but I finished it in 40 minutes. The data you're prattling on about can't be from that test."
"Of course not. You didn't think our investigation would hinge on a walk-in test, did you? You've been under surveillance for some time."
"Yeah, okay. Drones and all that, but what about your data on how truthful I've been? Who's measuring that?"
"Your tapper is. Your automatic data is being constantly monitored and fed into the data core here at Central."
I glanced down at my forearm where my tapper resided. There were a few stray hairs growing out of the fleshy screen. Mine always seemed to do that. But otherwise, it looked the same as it always did. Tappers were parasitical things, that was for sure. organic computers that were so symbiotic with us that when we died, they were revived along with the rest of our bodies. They always came out fully functional again, just like any other essential organ. My tapper was my friend, my companion. It was like my own arm to me. I didn't like to think it was also spying on me in a new and unacceptable way.